glorious to she. Okay. Evam.
Thus.
Vilapante. Lamenting. Bala. The innocent woman. Vipane. In the solitary forest. Anugata. Strictly adherent. Patim. Unto her husband. Patita. Fallen down. Padayoho. At the feet. Varduhu. Of her husband. Rudite. While crying. Ashruni. Tears. Avartayat. She shed. Sounds like one of those things that she shed, you know, where you keep alliteration, where you keep repeating the same thing. Anyway. Translation, that most obedient wife thus fell down at the feet of her dead husband and began to cry pitifully in that solitary forest. Thus the tears rolled down from her eyes. You can repeat, that most obedient wife. Thus fell down at the feet of her dead husband. And began to cry pitifully. In that solitary forest. Thus the tears
rolled
down from her eyes.
So purport
by His Divine Grace, Srila Prabhupada, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Just as a devoted wife becomes afflicted at the passing of her husband, when a spiritual master passes away, the disciple becomes similarly bereaved. So it's a very short purport, so I'm just going to read the next text with its translation and purport. Text 50. Chittim daru mayim chitva. No, you don't have to repeat it. Tasyam pachyu kalevaram adipya chanumarande vilapanti manodate. She then prepared a blazing fire with firewood and placed the dead body of her husband upon it. When this was finished, she lamented severely and prepared herself to perish in the fire with her husband. So Srila Prabhupada explains in his purport, it is the long-standing tradition of the Vedic system that a faithful wife dies along with her husband. This is called Saha Marana. In India, the system was prevalent even to the date of British occupation. At that time, however, a wife who did not wish to die with her husband was sometimes forced to do so by her relatives. Formerly, that was not the case. The wife used to enter the fire voluntarily. The British government stopped this practice, considering it inhuman. However, from the early history of India, we find that when Maharaj Pandu died, he was survived by two wives, Madhuri and Kunti. The question was whether both should die or one should die. After the death of Maharaj Pandu, his wives settled that one should remain and the other should go. Madhuri would perish with her husband in the fire, and Kunti would remain to take charge of the five Pandava children. Even as late as 1936, we saw a devoted wife voluntarily enter the fire of her husband. This indicates that a devotee's wife must be prepared to act in such a way. Similarly, a devoted disciple, the spiritual master, would rather die with the spiritual master than fail to execute the spiritual master's mission. As the Supreme Personality of Godhead comes down upon this earth to reestablish the principles of religion, so his representative, the spiritual master, also comes to reestablish religious principles. It is the duty of the disciples to take charge of the mission of the spiritual master and execute it properly. Otherwise, the disciple should decide to die along with the spiritual master. In other words, to execute the will of the spiritual master, the disciple should be prepared to lay down his life and abandon all personal considerations. So, Om Gana Timadandasya Gananjana Shrakaya Chakshur Meditam Gena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. So this is the part of the Srimad Bhagavatam that we read quite a bit after the departure of His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami, Srila Prabhupada, in order to understand how to deal with the departure of Srila Prabhupada. I think, you know, Prabhupada will remember that, that practically, you know, every other class was reading from this part of the Srimad Bhagavatam. So, the question is, actually there's two topics I want to talk about in class. One is, how does one really come to the point of being dedicated to the mission of the spiritual master? And then the general principle after that is the principle of loyalty and dedication, not only to the spiritual master, but to others who you have obligations to. So these are two different topics, but are very much related. So of course, in the Vedic system, there was actually training, just like you have for dogs, there's obedience training. I don't know if you've ever heard of that before. So there was obedience training for the brahmachari, or brahmachari. Brahmachari gurukule vasandantar gaurahitam. That's from Srimad Bhagavatam. And it says brahmachari, the brahmachari would, of course, one should understand that brahmachari means anyone in a larger sense who is dedicated to spiritual life, brahmacharya. That means one who's acting in spiritual life. In a varnashram context, it means someone who is in a particular role. He's a single man. Nowadays they call that a bachelor. Anyway. But that's not really what we're referring to. We're not referring to bachelor life. We're referring to someone who is dedicated or who wants to be dedicated to achieving spiritual realization. So brahmachari gurukule vasandanta gurahitam. The brahmachari, or those who want spiritual realization, should live in the gurukula, should go to the gurukula. That's interesting. This word guru kula is also misunderstood. It doesn't mean school. It actually means the place of the spiritual master. So basically one has to make his place of residence a place of the spiritual master. This is the key. Not that you just like hang out with the kids in the school and you say that's the guru kula. You know, we use these words. We misuse words without understanding the actual meaning of the words. So one has to make his home, whether he's a brahmachari living in the ashram, sharing his clothes with 10,000 other brahmacharis like we did in the early days. I don't know if anyone remembers that. I think Purva would remember that. That you share your clothes. There's this one big bin with dhotis in it, and another big bin with shirts, another big bin with socks, and practically you'd never get matching socks. Yeah, that was interesting. So, remember in L.A. it was like that. So, whether one is living in a monastic situation, or one is living in a household life, or vanaprastha, or sannyas, whatever one's living situation is, one should make that place the place of the spiritual master. In other words, it's dedicated to the service of the spiritual master, not dedicated to your own sense gratification. In a sense, it has to be something that's really obvious when people walk in the door. I mean, maybe you don't know, but when it's hard to see it yourself, you know, without a mirror. So when people walk in the door, they actually feel Krishna's presence or feel the presence of Srila Prabhupada. So brahmachari, vasandhanta. So, and then one has to really be trained up somehow or other. And this requires the association of devotees. Danta. He has to have be tamed. that is tame senses, you know, like you tame an animal. Like it's similar to like we said, obedience training for dogs, that you have to tame them. Or like a horse, let's say a wild horse, where it's interesting, the comparison with a horse, sometimes they have these wild stallions that some cowboy would jump on top of and then would just ride it until he would break it. Not break the back or anything like that, till the stallion understood who the boss was. So it's very similar. That we have these wild senses, a gandagopir, as described, Vishatam Tamishram, Pallad Maharaj talking about this to his father, in fact. So we have wild senses. And someone has to learn how to control the senses by the proper association. Usually you can't do it by yourself. You need association to teach you the methodology for controlling the senses. And it's not that easy. I mean, there's many different aspects to the methodology for controlling the senses. One is regulation. Mityahara viharasya. One must be moderate in his eating, in his sleeping, and also regulated, you know, waking up at the same time every day, going to sleep, basically, unless there's some big preaching program. Very regulated. Some people are regulated to stay awake all night and sleeping during the day, but at least that's regulation. So that's a training. That's part of training, you know, being regulated. And then guror hitam, benefit. Working for the benefit of the spiritual master, that all day long you're focusing that I'm working for the benefit of Srila Prabhupada. And then Archyan Dasavan Nicho. One learns manners, good behavior. Because in the West they also have this thing where you're supposed to learn which fork to use when you eat the cake, what knife to use when you cut the meat. I mean, it's just a stupid thing. You know, I remember when I was young, go to these restaurants, and you just like, if you use the wrong fork, they'd look at you like you were a demon. So in other words, what we have is like manners, like eating with the right hand, receiving guests nicely, speaking nicely to guests, you know, all these other things that are manners, good manners. Please, the magic words, please and thank you. You know, like that. So anyway. Archyan, and then Dasavan, one must be full of service. Dasavan means understanding I'm simply a servant. I'm not the master, no matter what position I've been given, whether I have the service of guru, whether I have the service of whatever. Then one has to understand he's simply a servant. Gopi Bharata Padakamala Dasa Dasa Dasana Dasa. Anyways, and then ultimately, I'm not going to go through this whole verse, but ultimately one has to understand the guru is actually his best friend. Because the guru may tell him things. You know, sometimes we have this concept of best friends who only tell us things that please us, right? And, you know, he's my good buddy because he goes along with whatever nonsense, he drinks with me and everything like that. So it goes, oh yeah, I was just reading an article the other day that people in the university, nowadays they have to have a special department for people who are addicted. I mean, practically everyone's addicted to some sort of thing in the university, like liquor or something like that. But a special dormitories where people can only make friends with those people who are not drinking or not smoking or not taking drugs or anything like that. So, you know, we think to be friends, we have to just go along with whatever our friend is doing. But a real friend, I mean, just like the story in the Ramayana of Vibhishan, he was a real brother to Ravan. All the other associates just agreed with Ravan. They were all what we call in Hindi, chamchas, isn't it? Or chamach. That means spoons. That means they're just like yes men. Or, as we say, bootlickers, or they lick something else. But anyway, so, you know, bootlickers in America, we call it. So a real friend will tell you what's good for you. I mean, he's not gonna just like say, you know, yato mat tato pat. I was in Los Angeles one time, and Srila Prabhupada was giving a class, and basically, I think that's from Vivekananda, yato mat tato pat. So Prabhupada was paraphrasing that in terms of a book that had just been published in America about transactional analysis called I'm Okay, You're Okay. There was a book like that. And Prabhupada said, they say, I'm okay, you're okay. And Prabhupada said, we say, I'm okay, you're not okay. That's interesting. You know, Prabhupada had a real sense of humor. You know, just to use something that he had just read about. You know, when Prabhupada traveled sometimes, you know, he would read the Newsweek or Time magazine and then he would make a commentary on it. It's not that Prabhupada wouldn't read any of that stuff. I mean, there was one instance when Prabhupada went to Chicago and he had just read a magazine about crime and what to do about it. And so then practically all of his interactions in Chicago with the public officials was based upon that article where Prabhupada said, you know, we have the solution for crime. He was talking to this Lieutenant Moshe, I think, in Chicago. So So we have to understand the guru is our friend, a real friend who really tells us the truth about things. He doesn't just blow on the boil, but he pierces the boil, you know, the boil, the infection of material energy, with sharp words sometimes. So when one realizes that, here's my well-wisher, and one has good behavior and undergoes all the other training, then he can really be loyal or faithful or chaste or whatever the case may be, whatever word you're going to use. And then also he sees examples of other people like that. And so this is actually the training one undergoes. And it's interesting that it's also important while one is a child growing up that one sees that same quality in one's parents. Because if one doesn't see the quality in the parents, it's going to be hard for people to learn later on. You know, the parents should be faithful to the guru or at least be faithful to each other. Modern society is so hellish that we don't find this quality of loyalty and faithfulness between people, whether they're friends, whether they're married, or whatever. Just like there's one person who's running for the presidency of the United States. We're not going to mention his name, you know, and pollute the atmosphere here. But, I mean, he's on his third wife, and the other two wives, he basically had affairs, like open affairs for long periods of time with each wife, you know, the next wife as he was dumping the last wife. And basically, what did he do? Oh, yeah, well, one had cancer, was in the hospital. He served her with the divorce papers. Amazing, isn't it? And it looks like he may get the nomination for a particular party. We're not going to mention which party. Not the Sankirtan party. You know, in America, we just have Republicans and Democrats. Or also the Libertarian Party and other things. But anyway, the main two parties. Republicans. So it looks like, and so here is someone who obviously has issues. I don't want to criticize him too much. He basically has issues with loyalty. You know, uses people, or has used people, you know, say what he's doing now. And so he's an exemplar. As Krishna says in the Gita, yadyada charity shrestas, tatari vetaro janaha di jana. The people in general, they follow the leader. It's like we had this game when I was young, follow the leader. Did you ever play the game? No. All the kids, they used to do that. You know, follow the leader. It was very nice. So, and also, you know, kids function on that basis. Adults function on that basis. I mean, because in Kali Yuga, Kalo Shudra Sambhavad, basically everyone is Shudra. So they're not interested in examining life or philosophy. I was just talking to someone about this. As you want to preach in America now, you know, philosophy, you know, it's not going to work so well with the general mass of people. What you basically have to do is just feed them, give them some music, and that's about it, you know, and then they'll follow you anywhere. So, and of course, we have a nice system to do that. We're kitchen religion. We can feed them, give them some music, because the music should be done nicely, in tune. You know, just like I was, just with Frida Nedimaj, and I was showing him the most popular church, pictures of the most popular church in America. I can mention the person's name. It was the minister is a person named Joel Olston, and he has like 60,000 people come to his Sunday program. I mean, we're lucky if we have 60. So, no, usually we have more than that. So, but it's like not much philosophy, just music, dancing, and so we have that too. We have to become a little more professional in our presentation of our music and dancing, and then we'll attract more people. It's as simple as that. And they were also glorifying Krishna or glorifying God in their own words. It was like a sankirtan. One should appreciate when other religions do their sankirtan, and, you know, glorify God, glorify Jesus. I mean, that's sankirtan. It's not that we have this stereotyped understanding of what sankirtan is. Sankirtan means congregational glorification of God. And so if you're chanting any name of God or God's devotees, that's a type of sankirtan. So anyway, so the point I'm getting to is that modern society, because people are shudras, they generally just follow the example of the leaders, misleaders, as we say. And the leaders are just really challenged in their regulative principles, or challenged in their loyalty, because the topic of today's class is loyalty. So they don't have this. People aren't loyal to their parents anymore. And, you know, they don't take care of their parents when their parents get old. It's just not there anymore. What is speaking of husband and wife, like what's being described here. It's just so weird. It's a very weird culture. And, of course, this Western culture is making its way very quickly into India and other places through the agency of the media. You know, so it's not, you know, India, of course, in the villages, it's still some nice to a certain extent, certain villages. But basically, they have internet everywhere. Even in the smallest villages, they've laid this fiber optic cable. I mean, even years ago, 10 years ago, I did some trip in South India to the villages, and they were laying fiber optic cable everywhere, so everyone could have the advantage of being on the internet and perceiving the wonderful Western culture that was being portrayed. And of course, the Bollywood films with the lustiest things you could imagine and portrayed on the film. So we don't have this in the modern society. So it's very hard when people join the Krishna consciousness movement to instill in them this principle of loyalty or chastity. I know generally this principle of loyalty or chastity is applied in the husband-wife relationship, but that's really just a small segment of the totality, a small aspect or percentage of the totality of human relationships. I mean, generally you hear this thing about chaste wives because the husband wants the wife to become his servant. You know, they take this out of context. They say, you should be a chaste wife and just do what I say, keep your mouth closed, and just be so devoted to me. Because basically, men would like to have some worshiper. That's the male psychology. And the women, they like to be worshipped too in a different way. You know, they like to be the apple of their husband's eye. But the men, they like to have someone who just like bows down to them all the time. Putty Dave, isn't it? This is a Putty Dave. That means that, even the word Swami was originally used by the wife to refer to the husband. Swami means master. I'm not saying that's bad, that's actually good. But the husband shouldn't be thinking, now I have a servant. He should be thinking, now I have someone to serve. Because the husband-wife relationship should be one of friendship, too. Anyway, so it's very hard now to instill in people this quality of faithfulness or loyalty, whether it's to one's spiritual master, one's service, one's friends, one's wife. And so society is basically falling apart like that because the focus is actually on the personal enjoyment, the individual enjoyment. Not really on even what's good for me long term, but what's good for me right now, here and now. So it's really at the lowest level you can imagine in modern society. So the question is, what should we do in terms of developing ourselves or helping others develop this loyalty or dedication? The way to do this is to choose to associate with those who are loyal and dedicated and faithful, and take them as our role models, our heroes in society. And we have people like that in our Krishna Conscious Movement, people who stuck to the service, just like Prabhupada said, when the spiritual master passes away, then the disciple should be ready to leave this world unless he can serve the mission of the spiritual master. So that's really the test of one's loyalty, you know, through thick and thin. Whether, as they say, one shouldn't be a fair-weather disciple or fair-weather friend. Through thick and thin, and especially when the spiritual master or the husband or the friend or your relative passes away or is no longer there, no longer to give you instruction or association, that's the test. So we should seek out the association of those who have that essential quality of loyalty. And in our society, we see many examples of that. You know, not just the GBC people. I'm not going to just cite the GBC people. Many nice, humble, advanced devotees in our Krishna Conscious Movement who just remain loyal to Srila Prabhupada through thick and thin, and are serving his mission. Mm. Serving his mission means, basically, to see ISKCON as a whole, not just to see your particular part in the mission. Like Srila Prabhupada gave the instruction to the GBC, that GBC means GBC of the world. In other words, you have some individual zonal responsibility, but your basic main responsibility is for the whole world of Krishna consciousness. So not only should we be taking care of our individual responsibility, but actually see how it is integrated and how it should be integrated into the whole Krishna consciousness movement and work as a team. Srila Prabhupada gave the example of the Indian railway system, how they have this motto of keep the wheels turning. And so someone has the humble position of being the guy who shovels coal into the locomotive. I don't think they still have coal locomotives there. But when I was first going to India, they had coal locomotives. In other words, there was a whole car right behind the locomotive that was filled with this black coal. I think you all know what I'm talking about. And there was one man who was always covered with coal. And his business was to keep shoving coal into the locomotive, into the fire in the locomotive. And, of course, the smoke that came out of the smokestack was extremely black, so you didn't want to stick your face out of the window while the train was running, or else, you know, you'd have a skin change. You become very dark. And so Prabhupada gave that example. You know, one guy is shoving the coal in, but he's doing his duty, so he sees himself as part of the total and functions in that way for the overall good of the Krishna Conscious Movement. That's what it means to serve the mission of the spiritual master. Rather than thinking of my particular enjoyment or service, but to see how our life, our service, fits into the totality of Srila Prabhupada's mission, so this mission can grow as quickly as possible and ultimately change the face of society. So one also has to use his brains in order to do that. That means how to present Krishna consciousness according to time, place, and circumstance, which requires a lot of intelligence. You know, how are we going to present? How are we going to change the world? How are we going to have Krishna conscious presidents of the United States? You know, are they going to wear dhotis? You know, are the Supreme Court justices going to wear dhotis? We don't. Anyway, so I'm not going to come and get into that issue. Or how will they dress? Instead of being attached to one particular style of dress, it may or may not be productive insofar as spreading the movement. One has to really think in a broad fashion of Srila Prabhupada's desire. Srila Prabhupada's desire, he specifically stated, would not be satisfied until everybody is chanting Krishna's name. Everybody is Krishna conscious. So that requires some intelligence. And Prabhupada showed that intelligence to fulfill his spiritual master's desire. He changed some of the details, like how many rounds people chanted every day. But in order to fulfill his spiritual master's desire, he saw the intention of his spiritual master. And therefore, he could adjust the details. Anyway, so these are some points. So basically, this is the question, loyalty to the mission of the spiritual master. So any questions or comments about this? Apurvaji. Yeah.
So, in there's this philosophy also there in some families that it's called unschooling, where you don't impose any type of thing or engagement on kids unless they want to. But, generally, they ask, "Do you want to go to the temple?"
Mm-hmm. That's interesting. I was reading about this unschooling thing, and it's actually been successful with many people. Particularly, the success of it is dependent upon the parents setting a good example. I mean, obviously, unschooling doesn't mean we let the kids do anything. What was that movie, Animal Farm or something like that? Where the kids just, right? That was the name of the movie? Or Lord of the Flies. I forget the name of it. What? What? Anyway, it's not that just let the kids run hog wild. The children need some discipline. However, it is important to understand. I mean, I'm not saying I'm in favor of that system. I'm not saying I'm against that system. But it's important to understand the children's individual psychophysical nature. Because it's not that all sizes... Prabhupada also commented on this. All sizes fit everybody. I mean, like if you have a pair of pants, it's not that one pair of pants fits everybody. Maybe too small, maybe too big for certain people, or, you know, some more. Anyway, the waist may be too small or big, whatever. So Prabhupada said, in regard to our system of education, that we're trying to have everybody have the same type of education in America. And he commented on that because it indicated that we didn't understand people's varnas. And Prabhupada also said, you know, you have people in the army who are Shudras or Brahmanas. This was the time of the Vietnam War, the time of the draft. And there was, without consideration, I'm just paraphrasing what Prabhupada said, not the exact words, without consideration of their varna. So you see that Vietnam War was a disaster, not only because it was the wrong thing to do, but also because you had people who weren't really qualified to be soldiers fighting. There was so much marijuana smoking, and people were even shooting their commanding officers. I mean, it got really wild in Vietnam. So as far as schooling, people's psychophysical nature has to be understood. It's not that everybody should be going to the university. That's another thing that Prabhupada said. Certain people should go to the plow department. And by plow department, I'm not speaking in a derogatory fashion. That means they work with the cows. Because if you over-educate people, they become over-sophisticated to do things that are necessary for society. And in America, it's like that. I mean, if we didn't have people from different countries doing the agriculture, the crops wouldn't get picked. Even now, I was just reading in Georgia and in South Carolina, they have stricter policies about hiring people who are not documented. And so the farmers are reducing their planting because they're afraid they're not going to find anyone to pick all the crops. So, because people in America, you know, everybody is very sophisticated, wants a lot of money, wants to have this education, that education. But basically, most of the people in the university should be in the plow department. Hate to say that. I mean, they should learn how to read. There's no problem with reading. But they should be educated, you know, how to drive a team of oxen. You know, why do they have to? And they go to the university, and I was reading about the university, and so big problems with drinking. And one of the main things, I was just reading, one of the main ways that people occupy themselves in the university is this new thing called choking. Yeah. You know, they don't voluntarily choke each other or choke themselves because it gives them a high. Anyone read about that? I mean, it's big. Like one out of six or one out of five people do this. And sometimes they die and, you know, cause brain damage. I mean, should they be going to the university? I mean, I remember going to the university, and even when I went, when things were more pious, when I went to the university on Saturdays or Sunday morning, everybody was lying in the halls drunk. Are these brahmanas or the leaders of society? Let them get some technical education. Or let them learn how to operate, you know, agricultural equipment. But, you know, it's crazy. The whole system is crazy, you know. So I mean, there's something to be said about unschooling. I'm not saying I'm in favor of the whole thing, but allowing the kids to show their own propensities and desires as far as education is concerned, not try to fit everybody into the same box. Okay, time to greet the TV. It's a good question about unschooling.